This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Scotland Outdoors podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello and thank you very much for choosing to listen to this. I'm Mark Stephen. This podcast goes back 20 years ago to a series of programmes I made for BBC Radio Scotland called Mountain Tales. Now, each of the programmes featured one of Scotland's iconic hills and what it meant to the people who lived nearby. This particular programme features Shehalion, the Hill of the Fairy Folk. Shehalion, the fairy hill of the Caledonians, stands 3,547 feet high at the geographical centre of Perthshire. Half the mountain is owned by the John Muir Trust. The other half is owned by the de Salle Le Terrier family.
Perhaps people don't always realise that people who own mountains are actually very attached to them and not just, you know, pleased with what they own.
Shehalion had an omnipresent influence on school life. It literally was there in the background of everything.
Hill walkers, climbers today, they work on contours. Well, contours were actually discovered or invented on Shehalion.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's superb. Wonderful open view.
Nigel Hawkins is the director of the John Muir Trust. His home in Tayside has a fabulous view of Shehalion. But for him, the mountain's much more than just a professional commitment. It's a bit of a personal passion.
It's a lovely mountain to go up at all times of the year. We're looking at it at the moment in summer with no snow on it. When it's covered in snow, I mean, it's a different experience to go up the mountain. To go up it when it's windy and wet, you know, when the rain's pouring down, that's another experience as well. And it's tremendous to do that, to go up there in the mist, sometimes to get above the mist, to be sitting on that top there above the cloud looking round you, and you can see the other mountains, the peaks sticking out. That is a fantastic experience. So that's all part of the attraction of Shehalion to me.
You can see why it's such a popular mountain, but to a certain extent that popularity has nearly been its downfall. It was getting loved to death.
Exactly. We say it's a much-loved mountain, but because it attracted so many people, that was causing a lot of damage to the mountain. In more recent years, a car park was provided at Brazer Foss at the foot of the mountain on its northeast side, and so most people go to that car park, but it meant that people were then taking a beeline up from there up to the top on what was not an engineered path. There'd be no work. And through the years, this just became uglier and uglier as a scar. So really, it's a mountain that was in need of some loving care and attention. And the owners of the mountain actually approached public bodies, including John Muir Trust, 6 years ago to see if we might be willing to take it on to do something about the path. And so the John Muir Trust bought first one part of Shehalion and then from another owner another part of Shehalion, so that we would have the ownership, the guardianship of the path, but have options for realigning the path if that's what we wanted to do. So we then set up a local committee, local people. We have a very strong involvement of local people who live round the mountain, because in many ways that mountain belongs to the people of Kinlochranach and Abertholdi and the local communities round the mountain. That's their mountain.
None of the people who headed up it in the past would have meant it any harm, but I mean, everybody bears their own share of responsibility for that. How about you? As a private individual,
well, I've been up Shehalion many times myself, so yes, I'm guilty of this too. But people are putting things back, you know. Members of the John Muir Trust and others have contributed towards the appeal. So, if you like, a lot of the people who care about Shehalion, who love the mountain, have all helped in different ways, and they do want Shehalion to be restored to a former glory. she has a special place in this area, you know, in Tayside. If you speak to, you know, people in Dundee or Perth, if they've been up one mountain, it'll almost certainly be Sihalion. So it's a very wide appeal that the mountain has. But of course, it is very accessible to the main centres of population, the big cities like Edinburgh and Glasgow. So it's that's where the, you know, a lot of the pressures come because of the accessibility. But because it's such a prominent landmark, people are naturally drawn to it. You look at that, you say, gosh, I want to go up there.
Hello.
Hello, Ian. Mark, Stephen, good to see
you. How do you do?
Nice to meet you, too. How are you?
Nervous hound.
Have your family been here long?
100 years and a bit.
All right.
I'll lead on.
Okay, thank you.
As I was saying earlier, Sihalion is part-owned by the John Muir Trust, but the other half is owned by Ian de Salaterra and his wife Rose, who live at Loch Garry House on the north side. Morning, noon and night, Sihalion is just out their window.
Well, Sihalion's up there across the loch actually being a reservoir, and Sihalion rises going up to the very pyramid-like peak.
Is there a particular time of year which is your personal favourite?
I love the autumn when all the birches are golden and yellow and the rowan trees are red, the leaves turned bright fiery red, and the bracken has gone golden brown. And very often we have lovely clear blue skies, and you hear the stags roaring during the rutting season. It's the magical time of year.
Is there one particular day or experience or time or moment that you can think of that it's almost like a sort of mental postcard of Sihalion, something that would make sense to somebody listening to this on the other side of the world, you know, that describes what it's like?
Well, I think it would be to do with skiing, really. The way I used to go up was to go up from the Brazer Foss end, which is where the John Muir Trust are based now, and I would carry my skis. And then I'd come down Ptarmigan Corrie, which is very steep indeed, with a great lip of snow that you have to negotiate, climb up to the top again, and then do the gallows run. Gallows, because it's just about as near vertical as snow will hold. I think one of the days when I did that would certainly be the most enduring memory of my enjoyment of Sihalion.
Is that the same for you, or you picked another time?
I was stalking one day on the mountain on Sihalion, and the person I was with had gone back down the track for a Land Rover to collect a stag. And sitting on the trailer of the Land Rover, he found a very ancient-looking man wrapped up in multiple layers of clothing with a white face. And he established, when he got some words out of the old man, that he had come from Melbourne to die on our holy mountain. And he had been sleeping on the mountain for a week in sub-zero temperatures. And after a week, he decided that God didn't want him to die after all. So he saw these people down, which was us, further down the hill. He'd seen them the day before, in fact. And he said his legs wouldn't work that day. But this day, his legs had worked and he'd managed to get to the trailer. So I drove him as fast as I could down to the doctor's. Meanwhile, he was beginning to thaw out a bit. And when he got down, he was looked after. But he's told the policeman that he left his luggage on the mountain, under a rock. Well, if anybody knows Sihalion, there's a lot of rocks on Sihalion. They spent 2 weeks looking for his luggage and eventually found it on the next door hill.
Conscious of the fact we're talking about a mountain, which is a pretty big thing, but if you own a mountain or half a mountain even, do you feel protective of it?
We feel very protective of it, and for the animals and plant life on it. We're very, very attached to it emotionally.
Right, come on, Zed, let's go.
you're keen today, that's good.
Teacher Richard Paul lives at the very foot of Schehallion.
No idea.
This is the first view of Schehallion you get coming along the road from the house, and we're fortunate today, there's sun on it and a nice blue background. I've actually seen an eagle on one occasion circling around the summit there from the garden. You get your binoculars out and you can get a good view there. So I think eagles can now be classified as a garden bird. And also you do see ospreys out on the marshes out here on Dynaster Water too. I've been fortunate in seeing two at once on one occasion.
How radically does it change season to season?
Well, certainly fantastically different when it's covered in snow. You get some beautiful views in the snow, and you can get as good weather in the winter as you get in the summer, with beautiful blue skies and the snow glinting away. In the summer, of course, it's largely green. Different weather conditions give different views. It may be semi-shrouded in mist. Sometimes you get a banner cloud on the top, which is a fantastic sight. It's like a flag on top of it, with blue skies behind and just a stream of white cloud.
How many times have you been up this hill now?
Well, I don't know exactly. I'm afraid I've lost count, but it's certainly over 60. So I'm afraid I'll probably never succeed as a Munro bagger because, sadly, I keep going up the same hill all the time.
Of course, it's not just local people who have an interest in this mountain. You've kind of given it a worldwide audience through the web.
Yeah, so I have put up a page about Schehallion on which I list people who've climbed it who get in touch with me. And one of the more interesting ones was a Polish gentleman who came back to climb Schehallion after an absence of 60 years.
My name is Bohdan Szoprowicz, and I'm at Tampa, just about an hour's drive from where I live in Venice, Florida.
Well, despite living in an exotic location nowadays, during the Second World War, Bohdan was one of a few boys at a Polish exile school at the foot of Schehallion. And even back in those days, it made a big impression on him.
Oh, the mountain is formidable because whenever we woke up and had our lunch or breakfast, you could see the Schehallion right in front of you, just across the Tummel River.
And how often did you climb it?
Oh, I only climbed it once when I was at that school. Reason being that I was only 13 at the time. And we were sort of too young to be considered even being taken on excursions to the top of Schehallion.
So this wasn't an organized trip, this was something that you sort of snuck off and did yourselves?
Absolutely. We snuck off, the three of us decided that we're going to make it on our own. Somehow the girls found out about it, and one of the girls came to me and said, she wants to go with us. I put it to the vote with the boys, and the boys said, no, we don't want to play with girls. So I went back to her, I said, Renia, if you wait for us, at the crack of dawn, like 6 o'clock, at McGregor's Cave across the river, I will take you with us. And sure enough, by the time we reached McGregor's Cave, she was waiting for us. So she went up with us to the top. But what we all remember most was the actual climb itself, because we chose the steepest face facing us. And we found out as we neared the top that there were loose boulders and rocks. And one of two steps, and they were sort of hurling down, you know. And it was frightening. We had to sort of traverse it to the left and then come back to the top along a ridge.
But you came back for more.
About 1997, made a special trip to Scotland and find out whether or not it's feasible to consider a reunion at Kinlochranach near Schehallion and possibly even, try a climb of Schehallion. So I suggested to all of them, hey, fellows, how about celebrating 2000 on top of the Schehallion? Well, six of us started up. Two of us made it to the top. But keep in mind that there were two girls. The girl that came with me, when we were kids, she's in Chicago now, and four boys. Now, two of them had, problems with the knees. One had a hip replacement, and one of the girls was pretty heavy. So they had to turn back within about a couple of hours. There were many more people in that school who did, go to the top of Sihalion as kids, but only six or seven of us actually agreed to go to the top.
But two ascents of Sihalion, 55, 60 years apart. I mean, how did you feel the second time when you made it onto the summit?
I felt it was a stupid thing to do. And I can tell you honestly that when I got back to Kinlochranach, I took off my mountaineering boots and I donated it to a needy Kinlochranochian, and I said, never again.
Ranach educated Chris Tizo, chief executive of the outdoor clothing shops, also went to school at the bottom of Sihalion, but unlike Bogdan, he didn't have to sneak off to get his first taste of the mountain.
It was perhaps a bit of a brutal induction, in that the tradition of the school is that either on the first or the second weekend, new pupils are obliged to climb the mountain. So you suddenly find yourself beasted out of bed fairly early in the morning, and whilst the rest of the school have a little giggle to themselves, all the new incumbents are marched off up the local Munro.
What was it like? Can you remember?
Memory is, thankfully, a selective thing, isn't it? I think
not bad, was it?
I think perhaps it depended entirely on which term you arrived at the school. Of course, if you arrived halfway through a year and arrived at the start of a summer term, then you were probably in for a lovely day, as we're enjoying today. I, however, wasn't so lucky, and as I recall, it was pretty damp and pretty miserable. But thankfully, there were many more memorable days to enjoy.
I tend to find that there's one day particularly, one image that stands out. Do you have such a thing?
The Loch Ranach Marathon, which sadly no longer takes place, used to occur every year and was actually organised by a couple of teachers from the school. It was not necessarily expected of you to enter, but certainly there was a significant amount of peer pressure, and obviously, given the age restrictions, you were only eligible to enter in your final year, which was 1989 for me, and it was a gloriously hot summer and a stunning, stunning day. And I, of course, hadn't trained for the marathon at all. And so
confidence, it's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. No, ignorance, I think. Anyway, I struggled around the 26.2 miles, and it's hard to describe just how beautiful a day it was. And we finished up, and by coincidence, my housemaster was also the school first 15 rugby coach and a very keen health, fitness and outdoors man himself. And he came up with this brilliant idea that we would make an expedition that night up Sihalion, given the fact that it was such a special, special day, and spend the night on the top and experience what promised to be a quite, quite unique dawn. So after a long shower and a change of clothes, off we went and struggled to the top and bivvied there for the night with a couple of flasks. We awoke the next morning around 4:30, I think, to just the most wonderful dawn. Privilege is the best word to describe it. You felt like you were trespassing ever so slightly. A tremendous sense of peace and calm, and the bright orange glow that goes with a summer dawn in Scotland. It's very, very special indeed, and just very serene. And as I say, you feel like you can't quite believe that you're there getting the opportunity to catch a glimpse of something that perhaps you shouldn't be.
She's a misty mountain lady, and she lives upon the hill where the early morning sunshine treads the weary water mill.
Now, Gordon Mingus is one half of folk duo Gabba Lunsey. Many of his songs have been inspired by the mountain.
I think Shehalion inspires me because I tend to climb it in parts where there's not really a mainstream lot of climbers going up and down. And sometimes I just sit there in the solitude. And there's one day in particular that stands out in my mind when I was on the hill with my young daughters, and it was a fairly misty day. It was an overcast, and there was a little sort of patch of mist about 100 yards away from us, and my daughter ran into it and totally disappeared, and she appeared far away from where I was expecting her to come out of the mist, and this sort of put the notion together for a song called Misty Mountain Lady.
It's told among the Highland folk that on the darkest night she leads travellers to danger with her phantom fairy light. She need only smile upon them and they follow with a will. The misty mountain lady on the hill.
I don't just feel that Shehalion has been given the name of being a fairy mountain for nothing. I do believe, totally, that there is a fairy presence on the mountain. The wee folk are there, and it's a good feeling.
Shehalion has a broad and a well-worn path, and however sort of daunting the climb might seem at the bottom, I mean, most people could climb Shehalion, and we felt that that was typical of the course of the path that most families would take.
The Shehalion unit is a ward at York Hill Hospital in Glasgow. Consultant paediatric haematologist Dr. Brenda Gibson chose the name. Shehalion's her favourite Munro and the first one that she climbed, but over and above that, she thought the hill's name was a good choice for the name of a children's cancer ward.
We wanted something Scottish, we wanted a Scottish name, and we wanted something a bit symbolic of what the families would face when they came through a unit like this. To be given a diagnosis of cancer or leukemia is devastating. It's a lot of treatment, it's a long uphill struggle, and a mountain seemed quite symbolic of the climb and the upway path that a lot of families would have to take before their child was eventually cured, you know, of their cancer or their leukemia. Shehalion's quite an important mountain in Scotland. It's central. Children come from all over Scotland to this unit, so a central mountain seemed quite quite appropriate. As you get to the top of Shehalion, there's a blind summit, and it's not unusual for our families to think they've made it and then have a bit of a setback and start climbing again. But when you get to the top, it's got fabulous views and it's well worth the effort. Units like this are very heavily dependent on charity. And because childhood cancer and leukemia is quite an emotive disease, we do very well with fundraising efforts. And Shehalion has given a focus for families to raise money by climbing. And many, many of our families have got together with groups of friends and relatives, climbed the mountain and done it a sponsored way and donated the funds to the unit. We also, a number of years ago, took the children from the ward who were able to climb the mountain one Sunday up, and almost everybody got to the top.
It wasn't until I went to the Brazafoss car park and saw the wee sign at the bottom that I realised that Shehalion had played such a key role in early science in Scotland.
Yes, it really has a fantastic place because hill walkers, climbers today use maps and they go on contours, they work on contours, which are just so important, and we take those for granted. Well, contours were actually discovered or invented. The idea was conceived on Shehalion. And how that came about was, going back to 1774, the Reverend Neville Maskelyne carried out experiments on the mountain And he was using this wonderful conical shape of the mountain. He was trying to determine the weight of the earth. And these experiments done way, way back then in the 18th century have actually been shown to be correct, that the figures they came up with were almost spot on, you know, when compared with applying all the latest technology, science, etc., that we can today. So it is quite remarkable. But from that, Charles Hutton of Edinburgh, who was part of this, more or less drew lines, drawing the points around the mountain where the pendulums, the sites were, that the experiments were carried out. And then he linked them together because these were of equal height. And in doing so, he was drawing the first contours. And he developed the concept of contours, which, of course, is so important to today's map makers and well, to so many people, everybody who goes to the mountains.
You could just imagine Hutton sitting there. You know, one of the old-fashioned maps, which basically just had a point, you know, sometimes with lines radiating out almost like a primitive sun, saying, well, yes, this is a mountain.
Yes.
Having these points and idly doodling around and saying, oh, that's an interesting idea.
That's right, yes, that's absolutely. Just sort of linking up these
join
points.
The dots.
Join the dots, that's right, but coming up with contours. And then just seeing the importance of that, of actually being able to show different heights on the mountain. And that all happened here, you know, on Schiehallion. So it's not just important for natural history, it's important for cultural and scientific history. It has a very special place, that mountain.
It's the feature that everyone knows and sees and associates with the area, and it's what you think of, perhaps, when you come to Kinlochranach.
It is such a landmark seen over a huge part of Scotland, and as you get nearer to it, it becomes bigger and bigger and more awesome. So I think it's seen as a magical mountain.
It's a very peaceful mountain for me, but it's also a very majestic mountain. And my mother had a toast. It says, here's to the back of Schiehallion. And there is no back to Schiehallion, it's just everywhere else in Scotland. It just means here's to Scotland.
The story there of Schiehallion. Please get in touch with us and tell us where you listen. You can contact us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. Until the next time, I'm Mark Stephen. Thanks for listening.